It is time to finally welcome back our friends from the Berkshire Edge, the BerkshireEdge.com with the Berkshire Edge on air. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome back Marcy and David. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Nice,
good morning.
To,
good
nice
morning.
To talk to you again.
Well, you are in a hot state.
Oh, well, hot
in
many ways.
That's right. And getting hotter, and it won't go
quite,
on for a while.
Quite literally, actually.
That's exactly right. Well, I want to start off because not only I knew you were going to have a lead story about what happened in West
last
Stockbridge,
night, right.
But also what happened in, was it Boston, with the primary there? I mean, some pretty big shockers in Massachusetts.
What did happen in Boston? I don't
know. The first black congressional woman is going to be running. And she won.
A big
upset, and it's going to be the first time in the state's history.
That's right. She did. Yep.
This
seems to be a trend, yeah. Nationwide, doesn't it?
Yeah, women getting into politics the first time, and minority women coming up with blockbuster wins in primaries.
Well, we had that same thing in Berkshire County last night, as you were referring to it, which surprised me, actually. I guess in retrospect, it shouldn't have surprised me, because a woman, Andrea Harrington, upset won the Democratic primary race for district attorney. Now, that may not sound like much, but in fact it is, because she was up against an embedded machine politician, or machine designated crowned politician from Pittsfield. And Andrea Harrington is a lawyer who has very little trial experience, I might add.
Very little law experience.
And law experience, too. Right. And she upset, she ran a very vigorous campaign, and I think she won by 500 votes or so, which is, it was 40% to 37%, and then there was a third candidate as well.
Another woman.
And it was very interesting to see how this played out. It was, I would not have predicted this, actually.
Well, and, you know, there was a backstory to, well, maybe it's not backstory, but anyway, we had a district attorney named Capeless, who had been in office for a long time, and he thought he was being smart. He resigned 6 months ago, and he got appointed his deputy to be his successor, so that the deputy would be the incumbent at the time of the election. And these were people who were supported by the, you know, by the Pittsfield political machine.
Yep.
And Andrea Harrington and another woman, Judy Knight, both joined the race. And Andrea, I must say, conducted an extremely energetic campaign. I mean, she was everywhere. She was. She got a lot of endorsements. She really ran a very effective ground campaign. And, you know, at the beginning of the race, we never thought that she would win. First of all, she was going up against the machine politician.
And she's from South Carolina. She's from Richmond.
South County.
It's South County, and the Cacciavello, the so-called incumbent, was from Pittsfield.
And Pittsfield, of course, is the bigger town.
I was going to say the major. So he was had better name recognition with the bigger population base of the
right.
county.
Right. But she had some name recognition because she ran. Is it 2 years ago or 4 years ago? 2 years ago. She ran for state senator against a man named Adam Hines, and she lost as state senator. But she had been campaigning, you know, just very recently for another race. She was determined to win a position somewhere. And so she, you know, she entered the, and then there was another woman who joined also, who really had a lot of prosecutorial experience, a woman named Judy Knight. And so then, you know, when Judy entered the race, everyone said, well, there's, you know, no chance either of them will win because they're two women and they're both two progressive women. And they'll, you know,
split that vote.
But Andrea managed to win, and I am sure the machine politicians up in Pittsfield are shocked.
Well, you know, this reminds me of, you know, I'm in retrospect, as I say, this reminds me of a time about 15 years ago in Pittsfield when a group of women decided that they'd had enough of the male-dominated city council in Pittsfield. And that because they had concerns that were never going to be addressed. So they got together, and lo and behold, I think four or five women became city councilors. It was just astonishing how, and in fact, the mayor of Pittsfield, Linda Tyre, was one of them, and our state rep from Pittsfield, Patricia Farley Bouvier, was another, and they're still in politics, but at the time it was like a revolution. And the same people who organized that organized the campaign for Andrea Harrington. And, you know, it should have dawned on me right away that, we're in for a surprise here. And they did it again. It was really amazing. The women that organized together, and, you know, it was sort of a stealth campaign in a funny way.
It's interesting. Many years ago, I don't know if you have ever heard of a congressman by the name of Maurice Hinchy.
Yeah.
When I worked in Kingston, New York, Maurice Hinchy was a young leather jacket wearing guy, and he went up a guy by the name against a Republican named H. Clark Bell, for Congress, and he lost. But he came back 2 years later and ran against H. Clark Bell in then a very Republican area, and won, and stayed in office, I think it was 10 terms, 10, 15 terms.
Yeah, he just retired.
He just passed away. He had a...
Yeah. Yes, that's right. He was in the Hudson Valley.
Yes.
And which is a Republican, area.
Yeah. And so... It just shows that somebody who works hard and has people around them when they run for election and they learn and they go, it really, the harder you work, you really do have a chance. It's a pretty amazing story. It's the old story, Tip O'Neill. First time he ran, he lost, and then he couldn't understand why he lost. And somebody comes up to him and says, well, how many hands did you shake? How many doors did you knock on? And from that point on, Tip O'Neill never had a campaign where he didn't go door to door to door to door to door.
Himself.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think, frankly, Andrea or Eddie Inc., any challenger to the district attorney's office would have had a pretty good chance, simply because people are just alarmed beyond belief about the opioid crisis. And the district attorney's office under Capeless, their response to this is to lock them up. And, rather than get behind a real treatment program and a different kind of response to this opioid epidemic. And it'll be interesting to see how Andre Harrington actually manages to change that office. It'll be really interesting to see what
right.
she does. She has a whole different viewpoint of what the focus and attitude towards women and minorities and is going to be. And she's concerned that, for example, that the DA's office has not been as vigorous as it should be in attending to matters of sexual assault or violence, of domestic violence, and she's going to focus on those issues. So it's going to be a real sea change up there in Pittsfield. on McKay Street.
All right. Ah. So. I want to move on to something that is that will be painfully understood by people in Region 1, and that is you have a teacher in the Southern Berkshire Regional School District who made a post, a teacher actually that's been a science and technology teacher for 18 years,
yep.
basically referring to the new superintendent. We have a new superintendent came on board here that people and teachers are very, very leery of. Teachers, though, here fear for their jobs. They don't say anything. This person,
really?
I think they took a big chance and went out on social media and basically said, "Hey, something bad is happening here."
Well, let me tell you, this is a very also this is reflective of the modern media, you might say, environment, where his post was on Facebook. You know, he didn't come to a school committee meeting to raise his concerns. Instead, he posted on social media that he was basically in a hostile work environment. Now, this is all, exactly what's going to happen here. It's going to be very interesting. But he's apparently identified something that the other teachers in the Southern Berkshire Regional School District have been concerned about, and he just had the courage to come out and make it public. And it's going to be now the school committee is meeting tomorrow, which is going to be a very interesting meeting, to say the least. But what happened was, in the response of the school administration was quite interesting as well. He said that Jim Burlstein, who's the teacher, posted on Facebook that he thought the school was in danger. But what he meant was his job and education at Southern Berkshire was in danger. But one of the administrators there thought he was talking about some real
physical
threat to school. So on Tuesday morning, the Sheffield police showed up, and they took him and they took the teacher to the station to interview him about what he meant on this Facebook post. So we have actually his response to this whole episode, and he apologized for being what he called imprecise use of language, which caused, as he said in his words, caused some people to believe that there was an actual threat. That was never my intent. He said he was just saying that he wanted parents and teachers to know, and the school and the community to know about the sudden deterioration of the working conditions at Mount Everett.
Was it sudden? Did he say sudden, yes, or just deterioration?
Yes. Nope. I'm quoting exactly.
But then he started to get support from other people. Right?
He did. So this is going to be a subject of a meeting, and they have a rather new superintendent, and who is apparently the person who is in Burlstein's mind, opinion, and others has been causing the anxiety that he's trying to address. But it was quite a brouhaha, kids showing up at school with there was police making sure that there was no violence at the first on Tuesday morning.
I have to laugh because I was part of a group for the past several years that started to show up. It used to be Board of Education meetings would have 5 or 10 people at them.
Yeah.
Well, finally we started getting 50 to 70 people at the meetings, 80 people. Mm. And at one point, the superintendent asked the state police to show up.
He was worried, right?
Well, she was worried, but there was nothing. It was overkill. I mean, nobody. There wasn't going to be a mass takeover of the board. People were there to voice their opinions of displeasure. And I know board members don't get paid, and I know board members work very hard at their job, but we all have to deal with people that might criticize what we do.
Well, yes.
Well, also, the other thing that is going on here, which we'll probably have a story about, if not next, in the coming week, at least in the coming weeks, is that, you know, the school population here has been declining.
Yeah.
And we're left with an infrastructure that, public school infrastructure, that is really meant to deal with a larger population of students.
And it's probably an outdated infrastructure.
Well, it at least in terms of its geographical organization, yes. And so there's a lot of anxiety, I mean, amongst teachers, administrators, and parents about the future of schools. I mean, Southern Berkshire Regional School is predicted to have, in a few years, only 50 kids per class. That is, you know, 50 first graders in the whole district going to a school district that is geared for, you know, two and three times that many number of students per class. And it's a district that is quite rural and is spread over four or five towns in Southern Berkshire County, bordering on Connecticut and New York. And so they're having to come to terms with what this means and how they're going to reorganize themselves. I mean, I've heard some talk of why not a cross-state school district?
Or across county, at least.
Well, why shouldn't Berkshire Hills join Taconic? Is it the Taconic Hills school district in Connecticut, you know?
And what's amazing is that you know what it costs in some grammar schools in Region 1 to educate children with a tax base? $20,000 to $23,000 a year per student. And
yeah.
It's only going to go up as the student
right.
population goes down.
Right.
Yeah. And so there's this anxiety and pressure upon, you know, the school district and upon its administrators, and they see an uncertain future. So it's no wonder that there's a lot of tension in the school administration.
That right feeling now is shared in Massachusetts, I know in Northwest Connecticut,
yeah,
and in sections of adjacent eastern New York. Well, we have about 4 minutes left, and I want to get to the last story because I thought about you guys. I thought about you guys last week when a town, I forget which town it was, decided to get rid of plastic bottles and stuff. And what they're doing, they're installing water fountains in the town at various locations.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought immediately of Great Barrington, but you've got another story on how merchants see an opportunity in the single-use plastic water bottle ban.
Well, they did. Now, you know, we had at town meeting in May, the town passed instigated by the students from the high school who made this impassioned presentation, we could make one small step for mankind by eliminating single-use plastic water bottles, which are the bane of the Pacific Ocean and the environment. And so the people said, sure enough. However, some of the merchants who were affected, who do sell those, Poland Spring and bottles, for example, got enough a petition together and called for a reconsideration of this matter in a special town meeting. So on August 6th, we had this meeting, and once again, the ban was upheld. But in the meantime, some merchants in Great Barrington said, we want to be part of a movement to do away with plastic pollution. And so they have installed water fill-up stations.
Okay.
So you bring your reusable bottle, and there's free water. In two cases there's free water, and in one case at the co-op you pay 50 cents to fill up like a gallon jug. So this is filtered, you know.
Yep.
It's like having a Brita in your refrigerator, you know. So this was their answer to the to this ban, and it's very popular, as it turns out.
Well, it seems to make sense for merchants and also for towns that can afford to do it, because by putting that structure in place, that infrastructure in place, boy, does it help the recycling bin down the recycling streamline.
Oh yeah, I mean it is one small step, but it is a step that is symbolic in a way. But you know, enough of us do it, and we will reduce this.
And you know, this became, I mean, you know, in the discussions, both at the original town meeting and at the special one to vote on whether or not to recall. You know, these discussions about the bottle ban became discussions about democracy and freedom, and do we have the right to tell people what to drink? And you know, and you know, I don't see what the big deal is. I mean, when I was growing up, there were no individual use plastic water bottles. If you wanted to drink a water, you went and got one.
When we were growing up, if you would have told anybody that people would be paying $3 or $4 for a bottle of water,
right,
they would have looked at you and said, "You're
right.
Crazy."
Right. So you know, I really don't. I mean, you know, this has taken on a symbolic meaning way beyond its importance.
Well, I will just, we only have a minute. I'll wrap it up this way. Remember when we used to drive and we were told, I remember this because of New York State, that we have to have a little thing around ourselves called a seatbelt, and it was becoming mandatory in state by state, and people complained of the right, this, that, and everything. Well, it is now standard practice. Everybody, I'll say 99.9% do it.
And I must say that if I get into a car and I don't buckle my seatbelt, you know, sometimes I'm just going like down the block and I say, oh, I'm not going to. I feel naked without my seatbelt on.
Well,
I really can't drive without it.
And I think sooner or later people will accept the fact that it's much better not to have these wasting small plastic water bottles.
Well, it's a whole different style of life, you know. And how we, you know, it's interesting how we fell into this without thinking about it, you know.
Right.
It was just a matter, it's laziness in a way. It's a matter of convenience and wastefulness.
Yeah,
so we have to rethink the way we live here.
All right. Well,
what Great Barrington is about, making people think about things.
These are just some of the stories. TheBerkshireEdge.com. Once again, it's nice to have you guys back, and we'll speak to
Thank
you next week.
Well, we are back.
Okay.
We're back and kicking.
Okay. We'll speak to you next week.
Okay.
Take
bye.
Care, guys.
Bye-bye.
That is The Berkshire Edge on air here on Robin Hood Radio.